You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to New World Pictures Podcast. We're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures, as well as the movies nearly released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
I carnosaur can't wait to talk about this. Did that work? I'll workshop it. We'll come
I feel
back
like
to
we
me
just
later.
Woke you up. Yeah, we'll work. Okay. And Erica.
We'll allow it. Guys, I'm not feeling so well.
Uh-oh.
Got a bit of a fever.
The fever. It's taking over the whole house. The whole town. Yes, we're going to be talking about a movie that somewhat stretches the nearly of nearly New World when we talk about movies that New World nearly. But you know what? Next month, we're going to get even more nearly away from what nearly should mean. But we have a special guest to talk to us about this particular movie. He is Joseph R. Palinkas, and he has written a book, The History of Carnosaur. Joseph, welcome to the show.
Thank you, everybody. Seriously, thank you a lot. Yeah,
thunderous applause.
I'll send your checks later. I just got to pay the tax.
We're getting paid?
Best guest ever!
This was just total fate that you had reached out to me and told me about this, because I was like, last year I had an idea. I was like, I want to write about Carnosaur, because it was Corman's, like, you know, such a late 90s attempt for him to just kind of jump in on a popular movie and put out his own movie. And of course, on this podcast, we've talked about Battle Beyond the Stars, which is him trying to like beat Empire Strikes Back to movie yeah, theaters. Yeah. But he did it. He actually did it with Carnosaur, of all things, beating Jurassic Park to movie theaters. And I was like, I got to write a piece about it. And you've written an entire book about not just this movie, but the entire Carnosaur franchise. So I'm so excited to talk to you about this. But when did you first watch Carnosaur? When did you first get introduced to this franchise?
To answer your question right away, I was 13 years old and family video was still a thing. This is pretty much everyone's starting story. Mm. Like, oh, I saw the VHS tape. I just had to rent it and get it home. My dad let me bring it home one night, and I popped that sucker in. We had those big TVs, so it was up on a stilt. And it was summertime. Great time. Pitch blackout. Great atmosphere. I'm watching this.
Big TV. Are we talking 27, 24 inches? What are we talking about here?
24 inches. Yeah. Yeah. Big TV. Figure
oh,
it out.
Yeah. Big.
Yeah. Big, huge. Yeah. Big, yeah. I threw it in, watched all the intros and stuff like that, and I felt like I was in a very different movie. The atmosphere in the movie score just settled right in. At this point, I've seen like Halloween with my sister. We've seen all the nightmare films. Okay. You know, I'm a big Freddy Krueger fan, big Dokken fan, as you can tell. So we were already... Nice.
Dream Warriors.
Yeah, Dream Warriors. Yeah. That, yep.
Nice.
Love that nice. Record, too. But yeah, so I had a kind of an introduction to horror films at this point. And, you know, I grew up personally with the monster movies of the 50s and 60s on VHS tape, Godzilla and stuff like that. So I was already introduced to that kind of realm. And I'm watching this movie, and halfway through, I couldn't take my eyes out from it. I had this dread, and that was the whole, you know, intention of the entire movie. I think Adam Simon delivered that like nobody else, and it stuck with me once those credits rolled. You know, I've never seen a movie like that. I never had a movie make me feel that nihilistic feeling before. So at 13 years old, it was really strong, and I was just hooked. I watched it again right after. So
yes,
yeah, it was,
I love
it was
that.
Great.
Did you did you know about Jurassic Park like coming out? Because I mean,
yeah, I knew about Jurassic Park. I was actually born in November of '93, so I mean,
okay,
I'm the baby.
Oh, yeah,
here,
there so. You go.
Okay. Oh, sure.
I'm just gonna audio clutch my pearls for a second and also take some vitamins.
Yeah.
And keep up some, you know, osteoporosis pills.
We were all born in 94. I don't know what you're talking about, yeah, Joseph. Yeah. We're just a bunch of kids. Bunch of kids.
93? You're old.
Just a whole bunch of kids just hanging out talking Carnosaur.
Yeah.
But so you knew about Jurassic Park. So had you seen that prior to Carnosaur, and you just thought this was a continuation of more dinosaur movies?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, we saw I saw Jurassic Park 3 in theaters, and that was pretty cool. I was, you know, I was a big JP fan, as everyone is, growing up, mm-hmm. watching all these dinosaur stuff, and I just wanted more, man. I wanted to stretch out of my comfort zone, and every time I went down that horror aisle, you just saw the best box art. Like, it creeped you out. Like, yeah, this is what life's all about. At least for me. Mm-hmm. Seeing all this stuff. Yeah. And
agree.
Yeah, and I'm seeing, you know, these grotesque VHS covers and stuff, and it called to me. I was.
So yeah. You had been working on this book for a while, like before you put it out, in 2024, right? Is that when it came out?
Yeah, that's when I was able to finally publish it. But in college, I got another inkling to watch Carnosaur movies again and stuff. And I've discovered there was a novel that it was based on. And I went on Amazon at the time. It was cheap. It was like $20. It was a steal. You can't get the original version that cheap anymore. It's been reprinted since 2022, thankfully. But before that, you know, I read the novel, and it's even crazier than the movie in a lot of ways. But, I mean, Corman did a good job producing this movie with Adam Simon. They really curated a lot of the acts from the book into the movie. And that's what a lot of people don't realize. Like, there was a book before, you know. And they translated it pretty well to the movie. I mean, a lot of stuff had to be cut out, you know, because it's Roger Corman's budgets and stuff.
That's wild. I did not know there was a book.
It's insane.
I don't know a lot. You'll find that about me, Joseph. I know very little. I come in like a newborn baby. That's
newly
wild.
Born in 94. But
right,
but yeah,
right.
As it comes up in your book, right? Like he. Corman puts out his memoir in 1990, and he goes to a bookstore, and that's when they told him about Carnosaur, right? Or is around that time, and he found out about Carnosaur. And
yeah, well, apparently he was friends with Michael Crichton, and he would get book recommendations from him all the time. That anecdote didn't make it in the book, but I found out more stuff as the book was published. I got some funny anecdotes about that. So it was just kind of recommended, hey, go to this bookstore. There's some new stuff in, and Carnosaur appeared. You know, it was the Bar Publishing. It had a small little gathering in 87 and 89 here in the States, and it had a cult following for a minute until that book publisher liquidated, which is disappointing. But that happens. Yeah, I mean, like with Harry Adam Knight's novel, it just went nowhere. It was too soon. Like if it would have came out in the 90s, I'm pretty sure it would have been one of the, like, the greats of that era.
And as your book talks about, it's interesting that, like, Carnosaur itself, the book, before it becomes a movie, like, really the movie and the book are both really created because there's this potential for, like, dinosaurs really taking off. Like, so at the book, he writes the book because he thought somebody was saying, yeah, dinosaurs are going to become all the rage, just watch. So he wrote this book about dinosaurs. And then the movie's made because... you know, Corman's like, well, let's beat Jurassic Park to theaters.
Yeah, and when people get it kind of twisted around, when they call it like a ripoff of Jurassic Park, and it's never been a ripoff. It was definitely a cash in for sure. He waited, and he was smart about it. You know, that's what made Roger Corman. Mm-hmm. Everything he put into that movie, he made back. That was his most profitable film. You know, discovering that later, and when I was writing this book, I couldn't, you know, just from the video sales alone. Like, that entire franchise made him the most money ever.
It's also kind of a prequel to Jurassic Park, right? I mean, I don't want to give spoilers if people haven't seen it, but, I mean, the science is there.
We don't know where 2 and 3 and all the other movies go. We don't know. I mean, there's other...
That's
we've
true.
Only stepped into the Carnosaur franchise, you know?
That's
we've only
true.
Watched
We're
the first.
We're just dipping our toes into the Carnosaur pie.
Well, I heard the movie actually takes place in 1994. Okay, no.
The year of our birth.
Yeah.
That's right.
I don't remember
babies.
It well.
We don't know.
I was too little.
We're
I was too
babies.
Little.
Yeah, you were too little.
That's right.
Yeah, but he did buy a book. Like, he did want to try to, as you were saying, Corman wanted to try to not be like, this is just me stealing Jurassic Park's thunder. He went, got a book. This book came out before the movie. Got his own book. He was not trying to, like, you know.
He probably negotiated for the price of that book. Is what I mean, he was like, it's $20. He's like, I've got $17 on me.
Yeah, no, that's probably what happened. Yeah, they came to some sort of agreement on a bar napkin. You know, his wife went and did the deal, so it was never disclosed how much they bought, but I'm pretty sure it's like, hey, I got 5 cents. What do you think about that, right?
They got something because also he writes, the author of the book writes the first treatment, which he's credited for in the movie, so... I know this is, we just recently spoke to Kayla Janice about her book on Cockfighter, and I don't think that this number is maybe applicable here, but when he bought that book or the rights to that book, he paid $10,000 to the writer, and then the writer wrote like the first draft, and they would change it and do other things with it, but this was not a draft, this was just a treatment that he wrote based on his book, which subsequently they completely threw away, but... But he probably did make some money, you know. He probably made more than $20, I have to say. Probably some figure over that.
Yeah, he could have been too mad. I'm pretty sure he made some decent money off from that. I mean, he still complained about it, but I mean, the time was young,
the author complained.
Yeah, I was talking about John Sprosman. You know, like when you think about it, you know, like Jurassic Park's making all this money, they're spending all this money on this big movie. Where's my money? Where's my big dino money? You know, it's that mindset, but you know, if we see all the actual numbers, but like, hey, that's not bad, but you know, like that's kind of the independence he got when he forfeited New World Pictures, you know, in 83, and I can't remember who bought it up. I think you all more know that than I do, but you know, looking for that independence and for foraging new Concord and New Horizon, you know, so the direct-to-video business is a lot easier for him that way.
But when he gets the treatment and the book, and he gives it to Adam Simon, he even tells Adam Simon not to worry about the book, right?
Yeah, there's conflicting sort of, like, the whole premise of my book is kind of like a documentary. Like, I'll just let people say what they want to say. If they're comfortable with it, they'll sign off, and I'm like, okay, it's legal now. I could throw it out there. But that was my understanding when I talked to Adam and a few newspaper articles that reported that too. So they didn't entirely contradict. But yeah, I guess that's my understanding. It's like, duh, don't even bother about the book. Just do what you want with this treatment that I got, you know?
Okay. Okay. And Adam Simon, did he keep anything from the original book when he wrote the script? Did he hold on to it? Because I know he did read the book, right? So he did read it. But did he hold on to anything?
You know, when you're watching the movie and comparing the book, there's a lot of the carnage is retained. Like in the beginning of the book, you know, it gets straight into the action. You know, a couple gets killed out inside their chicken coop, you know. And it's just so grotesque. And in the beginning of the film, like it takes place at a chicken farm. You know, like it just takes bits and pieces and tries to form it together. But the book timeline matches up with the movie timeline of every attack. So like you get like 5 or 10 minutes of dialogue and then there's something happening. You know, 15 minutes pass by, there's something happening. Yeah, he really nailed that. He did a great job.
So he kept that spirit of like constant action mixed with the story, but it starts with chickens. They both start with chickens, the movie and the book. But there's not anything else he takes away from the book, right?
Just to recall off the top of my head, no, the treatment, Carmen saw it, like, I am not spending this money. Because what what Brosnan wanted, he neutered his novel slightly. I'd say probably about, like, 25%. And if you've read the novel, you would see how gargantuan that idea would get. And it's an insane book. It's a great read. It's a very fast read too. But it's good that some of the stuff was cut out of there. It was just one of those raunchy, fun pulp books. You know, it's still a great book. It's a basically 007 meets dinosaurs. You know, but a lot of that stuff has been retained. Especially with the character.
I'm doing some real time research right now. Carnosaur novel, Los Angeles Public Library.
Yeah,
just gonna read it real quick. Just gonna read a few pages.
Yeah. All 200 pages. Go. We'll wait.
He said it was a quick read. Joseph said it was a quick read. You can get through
they
it.
They have a digital ebook.
There you go. It's worth it. It's worth it. You could, if it's not worth
it, put it on hold right now.
You could email me, and be like, "Why'd you make me read this? What were you thinking?"
Did you please, read through the treatment?
That's my summer read.
Yeah.
I'm lining up my summer read.
Did you read through the treatment, the original treatment, or were you able to get a copy of that?
No, unfortunately, that's something that is a hot commodity. I would take out a loan to get the original script.
Who has this? Let us read it.
Yeah, come on. Like, I'll pay for it. Like, if money's an issue, we'll figure this out, okay?
Let's do it.
But you spoke to writer-director Adam Simon. Did he, he didn't float you like a copy of the original script? Did you see the...
So, the funny thing about that, he said it's in his garage somewhere, and as soon as he finds it, he's going to send it my way, like, for nothing. I'm like, what are you doing, man? I'm like, look, it was on eBay in 2018 for, like, $300. I didn't buy it at the time because I don't know, man.
It's $300. It's a lot.
Well, I mean, but now it's just gone, you know? So the original idea was I was going to get that script. I was supposed to have it before the book was published, but Adam was having some trouble and he's been really busy with his stuff. So I didn't want to keep pestering him. You know, we had that mutual respect and stuff, but we still keep in contact.
Nice.
You know? He's an awesome guy. Yeah.
Well, has he been able to take a look at the book?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I sent him a copy. I comped them a copy because he was very appreciative that I decided to do it. A lot of people seem to be really appreciative of it. And I would say this as a preference, like anyone could have made this book at any time. This is not like, I don't want this to be the end or like the guide, you know, but if people enjoy it that way, sure. I'll take some credit, you know, but like it could have been made by anybody. I'm an amateur.
But it wasn't, author. Joseph. It was made by
but
you.
But it wasn't.
It was you made you. It.
Yeah. It was made by you, friend.
Yeah.
New friend. Yeah. New old friend. Sorry, we're young, anything. But.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, I think it's so I think it's so admirable that you did that because I think it's so many. I mean, I have memories like that too of walking through the video store aisles and seeing stuff and being like, oh my gosh, like that's amazing. And knowing like, depending on my age, like my parents will never let me watch that. I'm going to have to wait and like try to catalog things that I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch this. I'm definitely going to see it. And so I think it's just so, you know, admirable. Like I'm proud of you. I'm jealous of you. I'm like, damn it. Yes. Hell yes. You just like saw that and loved it. And you were like, I'm writing a book on this. So I think that's kick ass because.
Well, thank you. Yeah. No, thank you.
You're welcome. Like, so cool that you did it. I'm like, you did it.
If you, it's awesome. And yeah, anyone else could have done it, but if they would have, we would have a Carnosaur book, but we don't. You're the one who wrote the Carnosaur book.
exactly.
Now, speaking of writing it. So how was it like getting people to do interviews? Was it easy to reach out to people? Was it an easy process?
First off, just a little tangent. John LeMay, awesome friend, great author. He's made like the Lost films, like everything. So if you're unfamiliar with his books are fantastic. Like, he made a book about unmade Jaws movies, unmade King Kong movies, giant monsters, stuff like that. Great writer. He pushed me to do this book. I'm like, I was trying to give him content in 2020 and he had me write an article about these movies. And I'm like, I kept pushing him because he was making a dinosaur, unmade dinosaur movies encyclopedia. Like it's all out there. He's like, why don't you just write the book, man? I'll help you. I'll set you all up and everything. You could publish under Bicep Books. And I'm like, you know what? Why not? Let's just do something crazy. I'm going to write this book. And my editor, Patrick Galvin, he wrote his own book too. Great friend, great author. He's the editor of the book. So if there's anything unedited, I will say that stuff was added in post-production. He had nothing to do with it. So if it's awful, that was me. And I didn't want to pay him anymore. I paid him a lot of money to do that. But he did good work. I pulled a Corman and just like, yeah, sure. That's fine.
We gotta go. We gotta meet this date. We gotta go.
Exactly.
We gotta
put it out. Yeah. Yeah. It was like that. And getting those interviews, of course I tried to reach out to Roger, but it wasn't until after I got a lot of them going. So I started with Adam and then I was going through every article. I wanted to kind of have a comprehensive guide. So I know there's stuff out there that have already been published in magazines, but you can't really go out and buy them anymore. They're not available. And I preference that at the start of the book. I'm like, I pulled some information. It's just a complete guide, whatever I could find. And I wanted that to be available, you know, but I added in my own stuff to make it worth the price tag, too. So people didn't feel ripped off. Ted Haynes was somebody that did the fabrication on a lot of those suits and the models and stuff. And he did a very nice thing for me and provided, like, unseen photos for Carnosaur 2. And I couldn't believe that. Like, the world hasn't seen them. I haven't seen them. And it blew my mind. Like, I'm like, what? I get these? I told him, like, you do understand I'm going to put this in a book, right? He's like, yeah. You know, so he signed off and he worked with me with that. And I got to talk with some of the actors. It was crazy talking with some of these actors. You watch them, you watch them on TV, you watch them in your favorite movies. And like years later, you see them as their older self, but they're still them, you know, and it just kind of takes you out of that moment. These people that work on a Roger Corman production, they're just something about them, you know, like they're the nicest, most genuine human beings I've ever met. You know, it just, it's insane the connections I made just because of this book.
Was there anyone that was like, sorry, I don't really want to talk Carnosaur?
So I tried to contact some of the bigger names, you know, like I knew I wasn't going to get Raphael Sparge ever. Like I tried to, we searched high and low to find any contact information, nothing. You know, I tried to get Miguel from Part 2, and he's a top bill actor, too. I mean, he's great. He was in Return of the Living Dead and one of the Nightmare movies. No, not Nightmare. One of the Friday the 13th films.
Friday 5.
Yeah, Friday 5, you know, and, like, I couldn't get
Leprechaun
a hold of him.
Leprechaun 4?
Leprechaun, yeah, my favorite Leprechaun.
Lost Leprechaun in space. Come it's on.
Just, yeah, it's great. Awesome. Yeah, so I guess I didn't get any rejections flat out, but I never got any responses back. And I think the most heart-wrenching one, it was 8 days before Roger passed, Roger Corman. I called his office. I tried talking to him. I tried talking to Julie. I left messages, and I felt like a desperate fool, but I kept leaving messages, like, just for him, then for Julie, then I tried to talk to the attorneys. Nothing. Just absolutely zip. And then 8 days later he passed, you know, and I'm like, oh man, you know. And then recently with Jennifer Runyon, you know, that was really devastating. I really liked her in that movie. I've seen a lot of her movies since watching Carnosaur. I liked her performance, you know, I liked her.
Sure.
And it was just gut-wrenching. That one hit me probably the most. And then Diane Ladd, you know, I almost, through Mike Elliott, I almost got this close to be able to get her phone number and make that work. He texted her, but she said,
oh, wow,
she was busy. Yeah. Then Clint Howard, he has my phone number, but he was supposed to call me. And I don't think that ever came through. But Mike got really busy after Roger passed. And, you know, I haven't heard from him since 2024, but I hope he's doing well.
Yeah. Diane Ladd just passed away last year. And Jennifer Runyon just passed away this year, like just recently.
In March,
She
played Thrush, Anne Thrush.
Thrush. And, of course, I knew, recognized instantly because she's in that opening scene for Bill Murray and Ghostbusters. But also, she's Roger Corman's niece-in-law.
Yep.
Daughter-in-law.
She's married.
Yeah,
she's married to Roger Corman's nephew, Todd Corman.
Yep.
Gene's son. So,
yes.
So, and this was like the last movie she made, and then she like was pregnant right during when she made this, right? So
when I wrote that, some more information was dug up, and it was right in front of my face. Apparently, she did like a few like little cameos in movies, so it was never like full parts. So maybe I wasn't fully sliding the truth with that one, but yeah, this is her last full production, and It's just kind of heart-wrenching now that there's no release for this movie. Like, there was a U.S. cut that was, I mean, Roger cut it for theatrical purposes, and mostly just for when you're watching it on TV, because it played on TV a lot. But it was cut down. A lot of scenes were cut out, and a lot of context was cut out. So when you see reviews like, oh, this movie has, like, some jump cuts in it, those extra missing scenes were amazing, because it had a lot of Jennifer scenes in there where she really, you could really see her character be more fleshed out and see why she was so motivated to help, you know, Doc you know, in the movie.
Like, are these extra scenes?
Yeah, so they were cut out for TV syndication by Roger Corman, you know, which makes sense. I mean, you gotta make some money off that movie.
Sure.
But I was disappointed, like, in the home releases, they're nowhere to be found. But in foreign DVDs, they're found in its entirety, uncut. You know, like, one scene in particular that I love is after the scene where, you know, greetings, Green Brother, and the Dynakus just rips apart all those hippies and stuff. He comes back to the scene and shoots at the creature, you know, and it takes off. And the sheriff in this, the scene that was cut, the sheriff arrives at the trailer and they're talking about it, and the sheriff doesn't believe him. He thinks he killed all these people because he had such disdain for him through the entire movie. Yeah, that context is missing. He takes his gun away. Sense. Yeah, he takes his gun away and says, "You're going to have to come with me." And, you know, Doc's like, "Okay, do you mind if I use the John real quick?" He's like, "Sure." So, of course, it was a very quick scene. He jumps out the window and takes off, and that's why he's that's why he finds that Eunice van out in the middle of nowhere. That's why he didn't take his truck. He floated out of there. You know, he escaped.
Got it.
Yeah. Mm. So scenes like that are missing. That context is missing. And it just it made the movie even better for me.
Yeah, but he had to cut those scenes out because, I mean, this was a practice. He had to make this. You explain it in his book, and it's like, you know, we've been covering, I mean, a lot of his movies and stuff from the 70s and on. He had been doing this since way back in the 70s, and he started New World Pictures, that everything had to fit into four cans. He didn't want to pay for a fifth can, so everything had to be a certain runtime. So that's why he had to cut everything. Like, why he trims his movies down the way they are. They're always a nice, brisk 80 to 90 minutes, and God bless him for that. But also, like, sometimes you do miss some crucial stuff, but he doesn't want to pay for the extra can, so...
Yeah, I can see from that standpoint. I just wish maybe if some deal ever comes through with the Pacific Trust and stuff, they could just throw that back in there, leave it untouched, you know, just for the sake of the people, for Roger, for Diane, for Jennifer. Like, I'm going to pull that card, like, please, use sympathy, you know.
Now, you said Pacific Trust. So you talked about a little bit about the rights at the end of the book, but there is no release. I got a VHS of Carnosaur for us to watch, but there's not really a DVD. There's not really. I mean, I didn't look into foreign releases, but apparently I will need to. But in looking into stuff for the book, you didn't know where the rights went to? You weren't sure if Shout had them? I have to assume that's where the rights would be.
Yeah, well, according to Mike Elliott, the producer of 1 and 2, which he was a great interview. That was probably, I mean, all of them could be my favorite, right? But no, like, me and him, like, got buddy-buddy. He's like, come on out. I'll show you the lot. I'll show you Corman's lot. Come on out and just stay with us for a week. You know, like, we take care of room and board. Even the actor that...
Nice.
Greetings, Green Brother. Jewel, you know, he offered the same thing. He's like, come on out. Like, we'll go take a tour on the lot. You know, just come. I'm like, okay. MGM apparently had a deal, and I don't think it went the number crunching that Roger wanted. So that didn't go through very well. And then there was supposed to be some sort of deal in 2018 with Shout Factory. Well, what happened is, the latter half of the catalog got included. So everything from, I think, the 70s and, like, late 80s got transferred to Shout Factory. So that's why you've seen all these Shout Factory re-releases, like Battle Beyond the Stars and The Terror Within, or one of my favorites, Galaxy of Terror. You know, like, those all got beautiful 4K releases and stuff recently. And the Pacific Trust is the legal binding that... Corman put in for his kids to benefit them later in life.
Got it.
And included the Carnosaur movies, and you can look it up, the copyright office and everything. But that was meant for the kids when he passed on. But during 2018, his kids got really upset and took him to court to try to fight that. And it's just an unfortunate situation because now those movies are just in the abyss right now. Recently, I was checking the, you know, post-book launch, everything just starts falling out of the tree. You know, that was right, kind of the reason why I wrote the book anyway, besides it being a passion project. I just wanted to get people talking. And like, okay, where's the rights? Come on, come on. But so this guy named Robert Kelly, there's a registered name as of last year in January for Carnosaur. And this guy, Robert Kelly, has the rights to Carnosaur. And I tried emailing this guy. And I told Adam, like, hey, can you harass this man? Like, figure out what's going on. I have some friends trying to figure out what's going on. Nothing. So I probably won't hear anything. But I would imagine that maybe something's out there. I don't know. But like, it's either a complete reboot or a new IP or a re-release. I don't know. Or it's just nothing. I don't know. It's probably that.
Yeah, it also could be. I don't know. I mean, this is me speculating. So you tell me if I'm wrong. But it could be that Shout has them, but they haven't released a lot of, like, the 70s, like, New World movies. Yeah. They've kind of concentrated on the more popular titles, but there's a bunch of stuff they still haven't released. So, but I don't know how much Shout wants to put into
those
things.
Come on, Shout!
Yeah.
Feel the pressure.
That's right.
Of this.
That's right.
Episode. Oh, come on.
It is surprising that there isn't like a car, like there's a lot of boutique labels out there.
Yeah.
Are you telling me people aren't going to buy like a Carnosaur box set of like all three movies? Like 100% people are going to buy that, you know.
There's four people on this podcast that would buy it tomorrow.
Right.
Hell yeah.
I would buy it immediately. Like, I'm like, I don't care if I'm not included. I'll buy it. No, but just do it.
And then the book comes with it. Imagine you buy two of the full copies and you get the book.
I tell you what, Shout Factory, if you're watching, if you really have these rights right now, look at my eyes, okay? I will give away like 25 copies of my book signed, but you got to release this movie. All three of them. Come on, 4K. Let's go.
Release it.
Release it.
I will do it.
Do you even have the balls, Shout Factory? Do you even have the balls to release it?
This is the deal they've been waiting for.
They've been waiting for someone to tantalize them.
They're
going to
feel this pressure. They're going to do it.
Finally.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that'd be amazing. Watch. We'll get like an email next week. Like, hey, guys, guess what happened? No. Wishful thinking. To test the popularity of Carnosaur, my book has sold over 300 copies worldwide. So imagine if that was the 4K set, right? I mean, they would be like triple that. Come on, let's be real. Because they will release a 4K for anything. Like, I've seen movies come out, like Blue Monkey, for crying out loud, that was stuck on VHS. Or Creature, which is a fun movie, you know, but it's been stuck on VHS. Yeah, I like that movie a lot, Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, you know? you know, the Carnosaur movies only ever got, like, VHS and DVDs, and they had a weird DVD set in 2003, and then just poof, nothing. You know, I'm like, are you serious? You're making so much money. I did reach out to Shout, and I asked him, like, okay, let's just be real for a minute. Do you guys have the rights to the Carnosaur movies? You know, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people ask them that. They could just tell me no as a PR thing. Like, why would they tell me? I would just be like, blah, 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 blah. I mean, you know, me personally, I wouldn't, you know, but how would they know? They said no, they don't. It never came through, so.
Oh.
But
so they say they don't have it. Okay, that's interesting.
Right.
Okay.
And then from another source, actually, Movie Dumpster, some of the people that are kind of related to James Rolfe's Cinemassacre channel, kind of. You know, they're good friends with them and stuff. They said, apparently, one of them reached out and apparently talked to one of the attorneys. $50,000 a year to license the Carnosaur name just to get a re-release. You know, I'm like, oh.
Really?
Yeah, that would be a lot to put down. Yeah, because then you also have to do you have to spend all the money on restoring all the movies and all that stuff. So,
so that's
I wonder if that
why
would go to the author. I wonder if that goes to the author that he has, you know, wants to get a little bit, you know, his estate and stuff wants to get money for the Carnosaur name. I wonder.
And that could be a situation. But yeah, it could be. That could be a situation. But since his kin hasn't been able to be located by anybody, like, at all, like, they all reached out to him. Like, everyone's reached out to any of the Brosnans and stuff. Just nothing. They can't find him. I can't find him. I don't. I have my connections that are zip to none. So it's up in the air. But I'm assuming because of the treatment, he's not going to see any royalties. You know, it's such a It just falls in that gray area. I mean, he could. I don't know. It's speculation, but 50K is a lot to throw down, and that's probably why no one touched it. I'm like, I'm not paying you that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
It seems to me as the years go by, though, you would lower that price because as of right now, you're getting nothing.
Exactly.
So,
right.
40,000, 30,000, 25,000 is 25,000 more than you're getting right now.
Yeah, it's cost prohibitive.
So. Yeah.
Look, if you're watching this, look, I'll take out a loan. I'll buy the damn thing myself, and then I'll take it to somebody to get it done. Okay? Look, I'm going to put myself in debt, and we're going to figure it out, all right?
What? Yeah. We are making deals on this episode.
We're making deals.
Max out credit cards on this episode. Look, we're going to max out a credit card.
Look, we will make our dimes back. We will figure it out.
That's right. Well, speaking of Carnosaur, let's get into the movie. When was the last time you watched this, Joseph? Do you remember the last time you watched the movie? Was it recently?
I watched a bit of it like 5 months ago, and then I watched it again like a week after. So not too recently. I was doing other things too, working a lot and stuff. But it's still really fresh in my mind. I've seen this movie a lot.
I bet. I had not seen it, but I remember getting the VHS. I was like, oh, I saw this cover like all the time. I mean, I worked in video stores. You know, even being as young as I am, I still had got jobs in video stores, and I remember that cover. It was like, you know, it really was like, once I got, I was like, okay, this is great, because I remember this cover. Like I said, it all starts with chickens, and then Diane Ladd.
Oh, the human being is the worst. Human species is a disaster, and they gotta be stopped.
I love the irony of Corman seeing that Jurassic Park is going to be made and Laura Dern's going to be in it. And he goes, hey, I know Laura Dern's mom. I worked with her in 1966, the movie in which Laura Dern was conceived.
Yes.
The Wild yep. Racers. Yep. I'm going to call her mom up and gets her mom onto it. And the bit that I know you pulled together some interviews of Diane Ladd for the book, but she tells a story of just being like, what would you pay me? And he's like, here's what I'll pay you. And she's like, I made that money back when I made a movie with you in the 60s. Like, that's not what I get paid anymore. But he eventually gets her an offer that, like, she's like, all right, I'll do that. It's not probably exactly the kind of money she was making at the time, but was enough for her to go, sure, I'll do it. And thank God, because she's amazing in this movie. She's
phenomenal.
Makes this movie. Yeah.
Yeah, she creeped me the hell out. I mean, like, I was really compelled by her performance. So that's, you know, it really made the movie. I thought she was a little more terrifying than some of the creatures. Though, I mean, like, when they pop out of the shadows like that, the way Beekler's, you know, construction with his monsters, they always have such character, and it really instills mm-hmm. that creature, you know. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
Amazing the way they shot that stuff too. John Carl Beekler, who had worked with Corman on a number of stuff, and going back to, I think, Forbidden World.
Yep, Forbidden World.
And he made three different dinosaurs. He made like a 16-foot one. Tell me if I'm wrong, Joseph, because I'm quoting your book.
Yeah, it's 14 feet.
Oh, 14 feet. Okay.
Yeah.
So he makes a big one. Then he makes one for like a and it's like a man-made suit, so he can they can like manipulate things. And then they made like a 3-foot tall, little tiny copy, which they could just put it in the foreground or the background,
the marionette
or
shots,
to like to force the like perspective and make it look like it's a bigger monster that's coming after them, which actually I think is super effective in this. But
yeah.
We're going back to Ladd. She's doing research, supposedly about chickens, but she's actually breeding dinosaur eggs.
Yep.
You know, here's the thing, people. When you employ a genius, a little oversight's not going to hurt. You know? I mean, it's important to kind of know what she's up to.
Never give a genius too long of a leash.
right, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Maybe just, you know, a background check. At, you know, when you first hire them, doesn't hurt. Mm-hmm. Doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
Push.
Do a quick pass.
Yeah.
You know?
Also, then when they convert that office back room or that office bathroom into like an egg
hatchery
incubator.
Yeah, sure.
You know, like maybe you just check in.
Oh, yeah, she made a biological weapon. You know, what's the problem?
Yeah.
No, she just has a real odd design aesthetic. She likes things just real interesting. But yeah. I mean, she's not the only one. You have the other guy, the one who's, you know, doing his big pitch prone on the conference room table, who is genetically fusing cows with turnips. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would say across the board they have some they've made some questionable business decisions.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure what the end goal is with having some turnip DNA in a cow. Like, where do you make the money back that
the
on that?
What's you the make ROI the money on back on those pies that can sit on a shelf for like months and months at a time. 18 That's
months,
where the money is. That's where the 18, money is. 18.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I you got to throw a lot of darts. You're not always going to hit a bullseye, but you got to throw.
Is that not the juiciest, sweetest, freshest tasting blueberry pie you've ever tasted? Now, what if I were to tell you that this blueberry pie could sit in a box on a shelf, not in a refrigerator, mind you, but on a shelf for up to 18 months without losing one blueberry's worth of flavor or freshness? Huh?
Go ahead. Our main character is Doc. Joseph said he couldn't really talk to him. Raphael, how do you say his last name?
Sabaj. I slaughtered it for years, but I figured it out.
Raphael Sabaj, who's in Risky Business. He's in a bunch of other things. I think My Science Project. He's in like a bunch
Day.
Of. Yeah. So you've seen him in a bunch of stuff. He's.
Yep.
He is a night watchman for Eunice's machinery. I'm curious, what kind of doctor do you think he would have been had he actually gone through with it?
Well, that's something that, you know, in the beginning of the movie, like, he makes this comment about, like, I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy.
Better a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if he was some sort of surgeon in that regard.
I feel like he's just like a small town doctor. Like, he's maybe like a vet at best. You know?
Yeah, like, maybe.
Or I think he was like a vet and people are like, I don't know, he kind of knows his stuff. Or if they're, you know, like not trusting of doctors or don't want to go into the city to see a doctor. So, you know, he kind of... He can, you know, set a broken bone. He can, you know, his bedside manner is adorable.
You got a gash.
Yeah, he's just town doctor.
Just pour some liquor on it. It's fine.
Right.
That's right. That's the only anesthetic he needs.
Works for him. So,
They only have one cop for the entire town. They just have the sheriff. So, like, you know.
Yeah, they have one sheriff. Yeah. They have one doctor.
Very small town with a
four hippies. Sorry, now zero hippies, but
less hippies. Less. They did a have a huge hippie a population that got really halved. So it's really not as big as it once was.
Yeah.
There are moments in a. Speaking of, there are moments in any movie, particularly with any like New World movie or Corman movie, where you're like, okay, all right, I'm in on this. It's sort of like a line of demarcation. You're either in or you're like, I don't know about this. It was one where I was very much in, which is the moment when like the kids are like driving out in the field and then they get murdered by the Carnosaur, who's in a very like infant stage. So like I think the Carnosaur is like on the guy's chest and he's like and he's like reacting to like the 3 foot tall doll that John Carl Beekler has made. And I was like, well, and then they cut to the shot of him like with like the sun setting Carnosaur is just like looking off into the distance. I was like, well, I'm in on this. I mean, if I wasn't already, I'm definitely in now because this is the kind of stuff I love.
Exactly. Yeah. That after seeing that scene for the first time, I'm like, oh, you won't see this in Jurassic Park. This is not the kind of movie I thought it was going to be. I mean, like I said, rated R. So I'm like, I wonder what this is going to be like. But yeah, it was great. I'm like, all right, it's gonna be fun.
And of course, when they all get in the Jeep and they start driving along, I'm like, okay, well, these people are going to die. It's just set up with like 100%. We don't need to introduce you. We're not gonna burden you with names and backstory.
You don't need
we're
to
just
know
gonna
their
introduce
names.
These people.
It doesn't matter.
They're
be
drinking beer. They're driving. They're gonna die.
They'll be fine.
But I think Right. I think when I started to realize that not only have we started with chicken eggs and chickens, but now everyone's going to eat chicken and eat eggs through the entire movie, I mm-hmm. thought, okay, now this is where they've taken this to a new level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you have mm-hmm. when you have Clint Howard eating a chicken leg while walking into a chicken coop, I thought,
nervous mm-hmm. chickens.
Slow cap on this one. This one, you got this.
Love you, Clint.
Yeah,
Clint.
That was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Clint Howard's a great boost to any movie, but like, he's had such a long history with Corman, so it was great to see him in this. He'd had history with Clint's brother and dad, who was in a lot of the movies.
Yes.
Clint has been in, you know, Rock and Roll High School and a whole bunch of other movies for Roger. So it was great to have him there. Such a, just a unique presence. Like, it's just one of those guys, like, you know, you just can't get that kind of energy from just any old actor. So.
No.
You know, and Jurassic mm-hmm. Park did not have Clint Howard. So, you know.
That is a mark very against true. Jurassic Park. That is, what were you thinking?
That was a shot fired.
Wait, are we keeping score? Because I think we have one for Carnosaur, zero Jurassic Park.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to start writing this down.
Let's do this. Let's do this. Yeah.
Okay, all right. So we also have the, like we talked about, this incredible new business pitch where the doctor is selling the high shelf life of a pie.
Yeah.
But he does it. I've got to say, I've done a lot of pitching in my life. And I always did it obviously wrong. I realized the error of my ways.
Right.
I would put together a slide.
What do you think of the pie?
I would get in front of the room.
Do you like it, Senator?
Yeah. Not only did he lay prone, get a foot and a half away from their face.
Oh, my God. Right in their grills.
But I never thought, hey, when the client comes to your office, turn off all the lights.
Yeah.
So they have to sit.
Get it dark in here. Let's get it dark. Let's get it nice and dark.
Real dark. And everybody must drink classic Coke.
Yes.
That's the only thing
Make
we
sure
have.
Make sure the label's facing so you get that Coke product. Get that royalty. Yeah.
Exactly.
It made me feel like, God, if I was on a job interview and I walked in there, I'd be like, oh, please let me get the job here. People lay on the desks. They drink classic Coke.
It's nice and dark.
The lights are kind of off. I want to work here so badly.
Someone's eating a pie.
Seriously.
Oh, my God. Someone's they sell pie that's going to last 18 months. Oh, man.
Oh. We don't even have to refrigerate it. We can just leave it here and come back to it later. This is.
I might just talk to my boss through a video screen. Like, we don't interact live.
The flies won't touch it.
Terrific.
It's fine. I swear. Yeah. Flies won't touch it for 18 months.
I love that. That's like that's their business model. Because someone is like, look, I just want to go to the store. I want to buy a pie. I want to put it in the cupboard and I want to forget about it for 6 to 8 months. And then when I want pie, I want it there and I want it shelf ready for me.
Yeah.
Like, save grandma time.
I didn't realize that was a market that you needed to get into. It's such a weird...
I want to be prepared for Thanksgiving 18 months in advance.
Grandma's busy, okay? She's
I'm a prepper.
She's got a lot going on, all right?
Yeah,
right.
She's got a lot to do.
What can I say?
I'm prepping. I'm just prepping.
We talk a lot on this podcast about movies that have a lot of characters. And this is a movie that has a lot of characters. And normally we say that as a bit of an indictment.
Yeah.
But in this case, I loved how many characters are in this movie. There's a lot.
They just keep coming.
They don't spend too much time. They just keep coming. Mm-mm. And you don't really get much of a backstory, and you don't care. You're like, okay, let's see what this person's going to do with this crazy situation. I'm in.
Yeah. Did Jurassic Park have that? I don't know.
They do not.
There we go.
They have two. I would argue they have too few characters in Jurassic Park.
All right, there
Park.
We
okay,
go.
Do
yeah.
nothing right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. So much happens in this movie in what, like 90 minutes?
And it's just less bam, bam, bam.
So many things happen.
Yeah.
83
it's
minutes
constant.
Is the is the total
83
running.
Minutes.
Yeah, 83 minutes. Is the running
Jesus.
Time. It's crazy.
83 minutes. That's wild.
We got little Carney running around town, eating people, and just getting bigger.
Little Carney.
Out of context, that sounds funny.
It's a little carny. He's just growing up. He's eating people. He's learning about things. He's learning about the town. Getting around.
He's
real
all
well.
Alone.
He is alone.
He's just a little guy.
Yeah,
he's a little
alone.
Guy.
Yeah,
all by himself.
He's just learning about the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting bigger. And he attacks those protesters. The protester thing was a little weird for me because I know Jennifer Runyon was one of them, but then like she just seemed to be on the property. I didn't know what she was doing. I don't know if that was one of those extra scenes that would have given us more context.
Extra context. Yeah, there's a scene right before that scene, real quick. Doc and her were like getting into it, loving on each other, sipping some wine, and then they got into an argument. She got PO'd and just stomped out the door.
Oh,
and she came back with her. See, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's just like, those scenes are so important.
That would make a lot more sense.
That,
yeah.
Okay.
So
okay.
The relationship makes sense with that context. You know.
Yeah. Why he's
yes.
Eventually he goes and breaks in to what is it, Eunice Labs, right? And he's trying to get the cure for her because of course everybody's getting sick. They're getting sick with dinosaur disease. I love this too. This is
me
first
too.
Of all, you've created like we gotta have dinosaurs, and then we just birth them in chicken eggs. She even has giant eggs like in the lab. Like
she's been
it's
working
almost
on
like
the lab.
I've created like dinosaur eggs. Blah 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 blah. Yeah, I did that. Who cares? Blah blah blah. I did dinosaur eggs. Who cares? What I want to do is get the dinosaurs into tiny little chicken eggs. That's something. That's science. Forget the bigger eggs. I don't even care about that.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm saying. Grandma's been busy. That's why she has to have the 18 months of pie because she's been doing dinosaur stuff.
That's she's been so busy creating these eggs. And she creates these little chicken eggs. And then she's like, okay, we'd have all these eggs and we'd have all these dinosaurs and they'd take over the world. Sure.
Okay.
But what if I also infected everyone on the planet, so they had to give birth to dinosaurs as well. They're already in eggs. I've already done that. I've accomplished that. I got the eggs smaller. I got them chicken egg size. Now I want to just throw something in the air, make it so that people then give birth to them. And I'm assuming also guys, because once Doc breaks into the lab, she's like, oop. You got the disease, don't you? You got it. Because he's
got the fever.
He's got the fever.
Yeah.
I'm like, is he going to give birth to a dinosaur? Because, I mean, they come out just, spoilers for Carnosaur, but they come out alien style. You know? It doesn't seem to matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, like, male, female, doesn't matter. They're coming out. You just have to rip your chest open and out they come.
I think there was a missed opportunity now that you say it out loud. Like, they could have went even more full exploitation and just have one burst out of the guy's chest, too. Like, it's a brilliantly loony brilliance. Like, that's something, again, Adam retained from the novel because Penward, the main antagonist in the novel, is loony. Like, his plans are brilliant, right? But he's loony. This is brilliant and loony, and that's what I'm saying. He retains... like, not the same ideas, but
In the book, right, you were saying, you talk about in your book, about the book, Carnosaur, that, like, he's kind of like a Bond villain, like the main guy that's trying to create all these dinosaurs, which is not quite the same as Diane Ladd in this, but, like, kind of similar. Like, she's got some ideas, which they have let...
Yeah.
You know what? She's got a lot of ideas. She says a lot of crazy things. Let's just leave her alone in a lab and just let her cook.
Yeah, no kidding. It's just scarier in this way. It just feels way more realistic. Like, she really delivers that performance,
She's got a great monologue in this, too. She kills this great little monologue, which I have to think all that stuff had to have been shot, like, in Venice.
Oh, yeah, it was,
Which was all, the lumberyard, basically, where they shot.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the lumberyard.
Beyond the Stars and...
the Fantastic Four movie that was canned. They actually shot a lot of that interior, the laboratory, the Eunice Laboratory was also the main area in the Fantastic Four movie where, the henchmen are at and stuff. You can see it in the background.
Yeah, they redressed. They use a lot of the same sets because it was shot around
It's beautiful.
The same
time, I love that. I've seen like all the sets from all these movies and different Corman movies, and I love it. Yeah. I love it.
He had to reuse those sets. You don't want to keep, you know, just put a little splash of paint on them and just use them for something else.
No, I'm glad. It's resourceful. I love it.
Yeah, and look, Jurassic Park, Sir Richard Attenborough's character only created dinosaurs. She figured out a way to create dinosaurs and impregnate people with dinosaurs. So
yeah.
She upped the ante.
Brilliant.
In a brilliant big way.
Yeah.
That's why I feel like it's a prequel. It's a prequel. She does this.
Yeah.
This goes a little haywire. Imagine she's just, you know, out at the bar after work, runs into Richard, and is like, he's like, "Did you have a nice day?" He's got his little cane, his beard, and she's like, "You're not going to believe the day I had." And he's like, "Try me." And then she just goes off and tells him because she's had a little too much wine. And then there we go.
Also, this movie, in addition to having, obviously, comparisons to Jurassic Park, but it has comparisons to Alien, because you have the dinosaurs coming out of the chest, you know, and that going on. But it also gets a touch of the crazies.
Oh, yes,
where
yes,
you have,
yes.
You know, martial law coming into play.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think about that. People don't know who to trust. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
yes.
Look, they're touching on.
Did she put it in the water? Is that how she did it? Did she put it? Is that how they all got the fever?
Maybe.
Was it in the water?
Hey, they didn't need to explain it. People just got it.
Yeah,
it's just the way it is.
Don't even worry about it.
What a wild time for the HR of Eunice.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh my goodness! First of all, oh man. Yeah. First things first, you delivered your. Your direct reports baby that you planted inside of her. Where do I even begin? Mm-hmm. First mm-hmm. of all, you're not supposed to be putting stuff in people's lunches. All right? First of all.
I went through my paperwork that I signed. I didn't see that. So Jan from HR, I didn't mm-hmm. sign. Where was that in the paperwork?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see anything about not impregnating my coworker.
Read the
Jan
paperwork before you sign on any job. Read through it. Take the time. Yeah. They'll let
you know what you're signing. You're excited. You've got a new job. Right. It's with Eunice. You work underground. You can lay on a table. You're just like, who cares? I'll sign.
Yeah. Did they have in the paperwork for Diane Ladd that, like, they're like, please don't create an evil creature that will destroy the town? I don't know. But did they? I mean, they just let her run hog wild. They should have put that in the paperwork.
Mm-hmm. We knew you created a bioweapon before, but just don't do that again, okay? For at least
don't do that here. Don't do that here.
Yeah,
that was in the past. You did it before. Yeah. That's cool, but don't do it here. I want to shout out Harrison Page because.
Yes.
He is from Sledgehammer, which is also a TV show done by New World Television, and a huge favorite of ours. And we'll one day get discuss that show on the podcast. It's a great show, but he's great in this and has the best death of anyone. I mean, Clint Howard maybe second place, but Harrison Page has the best death in the movie, 100%. So great, so out of nowhere. I love that, like, sometimes in dinosaur movies or even, like, you know, you have, like, a shotgun. You're like, that's not going to do anything to a dinosaur. And it was like, no, it did.
It did,
It did take down a dinosaur. It did. But the dinosaur wasn't totally gone and still enacts a little revenge. I'm not going to say anything more because you need to see it. But
it's
incredible death.
Yeah. Did Jurassic Park have that?
Nope, they did not.
That's
Look
another
that.
One. That's
Free
another
nothing.
One.
Sorry, Spielberg.
That's another one.
I also love that in your book the interviews that you get of Harrison Page was like, I did not like that movie.
I felt bad for you know, I just wish the press around that time wasn't so brutal, but like in hindsight, you know, everyone I've talked to, they really adore the movie. They really enjoy it for what it is, you know. So if that context was there being compared to Jurassic Park, I'm pretty sure he'd be happy about it. But, you know,
you go to any movie as an actor, I'm sure, and you're like, this could be great, this could be good, or, you know, but, you know.
But, man, I would love to do a showing of this, especially if any actors, like, who was in this is like, I don't know, I did it, I'm embarrassed.
No, you're
like,
wrong.
Show it again now. Be like, no, you're so wrong. People are, if they have not seen this, they're going to love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this would be an absolute crowd pleaser. This would be so fun.
Absolutely.
To do.
Yeah. It's a blast.
Yeah, you got
it is a wild.
Awesome death scene. Like it's something out of Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street. You got an awesome kill, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For
a
sure.
A couple awesome kills.
Well, there's a lot of them, especially
wild ones.
We didn't mention it, but the laser pen, you know, with the Tyrannosaur, that's the part that got me.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Like that that scared me.
Yeah.
That got me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one got me.
Also tricking that guy in there
it was like, oh, that's so disgusting.
Yeah, thinking his daughter was there.
That was evil.
That's brutal.
Me.
That's pretty dark. Yeah. That's some dark stuff.
That was evil.
Corman stuff.
And the sheriff? You're like, Sheriff, no!
Yeah, no! But he got the monster, though.
So. Yeah.
It's speculated in the script, but Adam was talking about a scene. It was a really brutal scene. It was cut. So it was a kind of elaborated on through post-interviews and stuff with my buddy. It was alluding to some sort of deleted scene where a family gets brutally murdered. You know, so his family is sick when he leaves them. You know, why is he so bent up and angry? And apparently the scene was supposed to be that Deinicus actually, when he went out to go find it, the Deinicus snuck in and killed his family. And it was supposed to be a scene. Yeah, this movie is supposed to be way more.
Dang.
Yeah, this movie is supposed to be way more brutal. And I still like that would have been hard to watch, you know, right?
Yeah.
Like even for me, I'm like, that's tough, you know, so maybe I'm kind of glad they didn't make it in.
Because they have that adorable scene too, like with him and his wife when she's in the kitchen and in there, like just being very cute.
The kids.
And he like steals the what is it? Oh my god,
the apron,
yeah,
the apron from her and puts it on, and you're like, oh my god, they're the cutest.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would have been brutal to watch them all. Like,
and he gets to the town, he's all, you know, pumped up and stuff. He's like, you know, come on out, you know. It's it couldn't be because of the puppy.
I know you're here. Come on out! I'm waiting for you right here. Come on! Got nothing to lose!
Yeah, the end of the movie, we've taken some inspiration from Alien already with the little dinosaur coming through the chest. But we take inspiration from Aliens for our ending in the Bobcat.
Yeah.
Where he goes after the biggest dinosaur, Tyrannosaurus Rex. I loved hearing that like the dinosaur expert that worked on this movie was like, yeah, Tyrannosaurus Rex are actually more closer to birds. They're not really like they're not the Carnosaur that people think. That's actually, I think what the Allosaur he said was a different.
Tyrannosaur wasn't classified as a Carnosaur since the 60s, so
so it's like another dinosaur that is actually the Carnosaur. They are closer to birds, which maybe explains the little tiny arms, I don't know, but in any case, he goes after this big Tyrannosaurus Rex with just the Bobcat. And it's really a marvel of editing. I loved this ending scene. It was fantastic.
Yeah, the Bobcat jumps up in the air and uppercuts him, you know?
Yeah.
Somehow. And apparently, Raphael was like given like a tiny bit of training on how to even drive one of those Bobcats for like a second. And then they're like, let's roll.
You got this, man. Kill Barney.
I love that ending. What'd you guys think?
No, the ending's great.
It was creepy.
I think I'm still caught up on you saying that the Carnosaur is more like a bird, because I'm like, yes, because it always attacks like very much with its
with its mouth
and mouth,
yeah.
And then it's still like crafty with his feet. I'm like,
especially with
its
feet.
Completely birdy.
Like earlier with the guys in the Eunice van, he kills him like the Roadrunner, feet first, you know? I'm like,
like a bird.
True.
Yeah.
Or their roars. Yeah. If you listen to their roars really carefully, there's a lot of eagle in there. There's a lot of albatross, you know, and stuff like that. It's really creepy and unearthly.
And I think people are, I mean, not me, because I'm a weirdo who owns a bird, so I'm a weird bird lady. Take that, listeners. Never seen Godfather and own a bird.
I haven't seen it either.
Sorry. Off the market.
That's right.
The movie is a trip. It's a trip. And we should say, spoiler, huge spoilers. If someone wants to watch this and not have it be spoiled, you should pause.
End it right now. Just leave the stream, come back to it later.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
Go see it. Go watch it. Maybe on our YouTube channel. We'll see.
We'll try.
Ooh,
we'll try. Yeah. We'll see if
I also loved
Yeah, if the rights gods are on our
side. I loved the ending scene, and I loved that Thrush knocks herself the fuck out in that Bobcat.
Yeah.
She could have been first. Yes. How, that's Raphael a lot of whiplash to take it. You out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's handled
extremely
well. She's
not feeling
well,
like, guys.
Oh, yeah, that's very true. I've seen, obviously, I've been around a lot of Bobcats, and what you said, Ryan, about it being a marvel in editing, that is so true, because they're nimble but also kind of slow, and to make that work, it's pretty incredible how they got it to all come together the way it does. And it looks really good, the way that it's all shot. There's a lot of quick cuts so that, you know, there, you feel the action and you feel the intensity of, at first, how are they even going to do this with a Bobcat? You think this seems almost impossible, but they find a way, and you know it.
Yeah.
I think it's a great ending to the movie.
Now there's another ending to the after this ending because, I was in the same state of mind thinking, this Bobcat's not going to do anything against a dinosaur, but it is successful. Mm-hmm. But then there's an ending after this. So again, we've already said spoilers, real spoilers here. Because after the ending, that's when we get what Mark was talking about, bringing up the crazies part of it, when the government comes in and kills our main characters. I was like, holy shit, I did not.
Yeah,
dark.
Yeah. There are some dark moments in this. We've discussed them. But, like, this was a pretty fun movie, like, as it goes. And the ending's like, yeah, that's over. You like Alfred E. Newman? He's burning. Is gone.
Mm-hmm.
They're dead. I was like, holy shit, this is dark. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a way to go out.
Yeah, and that movie just sticks
I
out.
I loved, too, the way that they shot the burning of Alfred E. Newman. His smile actually burns last, which it seems like total dumb luck. You wouldn't be able to like make that work without it just naturally happening, and it's not CGI, and the mouth sort of burns last and expands as it's being burnt. And then, Joseph, you said this, it's the first movie that I've seen where the end credits scroll from the top down, not the bottom up.
Yes, sir.
Going down like that. And I was like,
yeah.
Hey, Jurassic Park didn't have that.
I was going to say, Jurassic Park had none of this.
So, do the main characters live in Jurassic Park? Yes. Do they live here? 100% no.
No.
Everyone's
that town
dead.
Gets eradicated. That town's
dead.
The whole town is dead.
Yeah. Dead town.
Yeah.
There's
multiple
maybe
employees at Unis are dead.
There's a couple. There's a couple stray hippies that might still be around, but you know they're not going to be able to put together like a city planning. They're not going to be able to refurbish the town. Yeah. They're not going to get it together.
And Jan from HR is going to come back from PTO on Monday and see all those dead bodies.
From Eunice and go, what happened here? What
and
happened?
And the dinosaur's loose and she's going to be like, gosh darn it. Can't I even go on PTO?
The only thing that made it from this town were those pies. Those.
Oh, yeah, the pies
those
are still
good. The pies are still good. That's it. They're the only things left.
Yeah.
Still half eaten in that conference room.
Now, we haven't gone further in our watching of the Carnosaur films, but without some spoilers, Joseph, just tell what's they continue on. And so I know there's other sequels. What do we have in store for 2 and 3? What's going to happen with, you know, without just give us a tease.
Well, I'm getting a good sense that everyone enjoyed their time with this movie.
For sure.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, then you're going to love Carnosaur 2. I will preface this, okay? Like, yeah, it is a blatant Aliens ripoff, but
yes.
I'm the only person that's ever said this. I prefer it to Aliens.
It
has a tighter, tighter, faster. I know I'm committing a horrible. Like everyone has looked at me on the other podcast I was on with my friend. He's like, "Well, that's just you, man." And I bust out laughing, but yeah, I'm like, yeah, but it has a tighter pace. It has dinosaurs. It has this, it's a I'll give the quick rundown, okay? This is something I loved about these two movies, that the characters are all entertaining. That continues, and it gets better. Like, it starts off great. Like, it,
awesome.
All right. I can't wait till you all see it. But this group of electricians gets sent to a government mining facility. So they have no weapons, right? They have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they stumble onto this problem. And dinosaurs break loose because, according to the government, that's where they took all those eggs, and that's where they put them in this abandoned nuclear facility. So during the Cold War, that's where they stored all the nuclear weapons. Well, it's out in the middle of the Nevada desert.
Shit, I'm in.
It's in.
I'm in.
It was shot at a really awesome location, but this movie is probably... I love Carnosaur 1. I do. I really do. But the Carnosaur 2 is my favorite movie, and it just ever... You see it, like, the shots in it alone are awesome. They changed the dinosaur roster a little bit. Now they're velociraptors. The T-Rex is back. Mm. It's awesome. No spoilers for you. But yeah, they get sent in.
We're watching it. Do you have it? We need to watch it.
Yeah, I can
send it.
Holy
shit. No, we all need to watch it together.
Yeah, oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, I would love that.
We need to watch it together.
I have a 4K scan of the 480p DVD
ripping party.
Well, what I did, I ripped the DVD because I would like to preserve it. Hey, I bought it. I have the right to do that. And I took it to my friend, and he upscaled it to 4K for me. So we could totally...
Amazing. Wow. Yeah. Amazing.
Hell yeah.
That's awesome.
Viewing party.
That was also at the end of the first Carnosaur. There was supposed to be a pterodactyl, right? And they didn't
end up using That's another cutting room. It was supposed to, like, fly or something at the end credits, which would have been cool, but, like, I would love to see a scene with the pterodactyl attacking something. You know? Like, come on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They apparently... Yeah. Beekler made it. But they just never used it. They just never shot
it. It was used in another... Yeah. I think it was used in Dinosaur Island.
Yes. Now, there's other movies. There's Dinosaur Island, right?
Yes.
And there's Carnosaur 2 and 3. And then, probably the one that I can't wait for us to get to the most is Raptor. Where Jim Wynorski comes in and does a Corman special, and what I call the movies he decides. Yeah. Let's just shoot a little bit of footage and take footage from all these other movies I have, and we'll just stitch it together. And so he makes a movie that takes footage from all the three other Carnosaurs to make another movie called Raptor, which I can't wait for, because that's what Corman... Nobody does that like Corman. Corman did that all the time. That's Smokey Bites the Dust, even kind of Space Raiders a little bit.
Yeah, Space Raiders,
He did a lot of that kind of stuff where he would just make a movie out of scraps of other footage from his other movies.
And
unbelievable
Jim,
stuff.
Yeah, I love Jim. It was a great interview with him, too. I love his movies, and he did a phenomenal job. Yeah, with Raptor, just really quick, you know, Jim accidentally, like, beat for beat the Carnosaur novel. I asked him, did you read it? You know, I just wanted to know. He's like, oh, no. You know, but like, that is, I will say Raptor is probably more faithful as far as beat for beat to the Carnosaur novel than Carnosaur 1 or 2. Like, Carnosaur 1 and 2 are their own thing.
Okay.
That virus subplot is like Carnosaur 1 only. It doesn't carry on for the sequel. So if you're expecting that, that's gone. Forget it. It's gone.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I can't wait for Raptor. That's going to be incredible. But real quickly, before we move on, final thoughts about Carnosaur. Mark, Erica, Joseph, final thoughts.
I think it's a must-see. And I think if you haven't seen it and you can get your hands on it or, you know, find it, see it somewhere,
come see
you
me.
Should
I'll put you in
and
the right
get
direction.
Some friends.
It's not streaming anywhere, so you do have to. It's probably YouTube, and it's about where you can
see it.
Makes
it even more fun. It's like a speakeasy movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't really.
You need the password. You gotta find. You gotta figure it out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's like trying to get to a rave in the early 2000s. It's hard.
Yeah. It's really hard. You have to. You have
you're
to
like,
know
coffee's
someone.
Ready. Coffee's ready. Just keep saying the password. Everybody,
like,
coffee's
like,
ready.
Back here. You're into Carnosaur. I get
Shut
it.
Shut up, you idiot. Yes, the coffee's ready. Be quiet. Come in here.
Yeah, don't say it so loud. Everybody will
want
to see Carnosaur.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mark, your thoughts on Carnosaur?
Yeah, I agree with everything Erica said. Yeah, it's a must see. It truly is. Awesome. It's an absolute blast from start to finish.
Yeah, we've been getting very lucky in our nearly new worlds, probably because we have jumped beyond the 80s and gone into further the 90s and 2000s, and you know we've kind of jumped beyond what would have been nearly new world. But you know, Corman didn't lose his touch, and that's what's kind of incredible about the Carnosaur movies, or at least Carnosaur 1. Joseph, thank you so much for joining us for this. This was so great.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate
it. Yeah. Thank you. Tell everybody where they can find your book. Everybody needs to get this book, History of Carnosaur. You can read about all the Dinosaur Island, Raptor, the three Carnosaur movies. It's all here in this book. It's a great, easy read. Got to get this book. Where can people get it?
Currently on Amazon. I do have a listing on Barnes & Noble, but it's a little more expensive because their pricing's a little bit different. It's the base price. I guess I could change it, but Amazon's easier to work with. It's at its lowest price, and it's going to stick there. I want people to be able to afford it, and it's $9.99 sure. on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. You told Steal me about right it, on. And I was like, yep. Somebody wrote a book about the Carnosaur franchise. I'm buying it. That's come
Thank
on,
you.
Yeah. come
Appreciate
on now.
That.
Yeah. You bet. Everybody should pick it up. It's a great read. You have taken the history of Carnosaur and put it in print. That is that's a great thing. So thank you, Joseph, for coming on the show. Where can people find you? Do you want people to find you out online or?
Yep, I'm only on. I keep calling it Twitter, but I'm on X. I like X because you could filter a lot of stuff out. But I like X too because I found this podcast, you know, and I'm like,
there you
oh,
go.
I,
there
you,
you go.
Know, like I couldn't find that anywhere else. So I'm like, that's where I'm just going to be for the time being.
Our marketing team is really kicking ass. We can't be found anywhere. Terrific. Terrific job, everyone. Bring in those eggs that are filled with green goo. They're for the marketing team.
Since I'm the only one that works in marketing, I definitely... I feel like I just got my review, so I'll work on that.
Yeah. You're on a pip. Yeah. You're on a pip, Mark.
Get to work, Mark.
Yeah, I know.
But go find Joseph on the socials. Go find this book on Amazon or wherever you want to buy the book. If you don't mind spending a little bit more, get it from Barnes & Noble if that's your thing. And you can find all of our episodes on our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. It's where you can find all of our stuff, our articles. You can find t-shirts. We have so many different designs of t-shirts. We don't have a Patreon, but buy a t-shirt, it helps support the show. And plus they're fun t-shirts, and people are going to be like, what is that? That shirt is so cool. Where did you get it? And then you'll say newworldpicturespodcast.com. We'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye everybody.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network, please select the link in the description.
The audio commentary. It's a dying art form, but here at One Track Mind, I, your wonky yet affable host, Ryan Luis Rodriguez, analyze film through the prism of these embryonic forms of podcasting, one audio commentary at a time. Masterpieces, crapster pieces, live action, animation, cult classics, films literally no one has ever heard of. No track is too small and no track is too big. Join me and my guests from the entertainment world as we keep these features alive every other Tuesday. Hey, who else is going to discuss Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey one week and Citizen Kane the next? Us, that's who. Sure, you have to put up with my voice, but there's a certain give and take in this industry. That's One Track Mind, part of the Someone's Favorite Productions family, and available wherever you get your podcasts.